a good Kabbalah Satayret. You know, the all the Svarim tell us that Shavuos is Matan Torah because the Eibishter gave the Torah one particular day. But the Kabbalah Satayret is B'chol Yom V'Yom. So it's not Shayach Zman of Kabbalah Satayret. It's every day you have to be Makabal. So Bezrus Hashem, we should continue to be Mamshech, to be Makabal. I just wanted to clarify, because someone had brought up something, just to clarify this. You know, I had mentioned Rav David Karlina. Actually, his name was Rav David Friedman. Rav David Karlina from this, right? He was the Rav of Karlin. Although he's a gadol that many of you may not have heard of, even. But many say he was the gadol shel begedalim. That means with Rav Chaim, you know, above even Rav Meir Simcha, above the Rugachever. Gadol shel begedalim. And I mentioned Rav Shach had a strange story why Rav David Karlina wasn't zeicha to pierce him, because he once embarrassed as a child, he embarrassed the Nachlas David. But somebody asked me, is this related to the Karlina Rebbe? So I want to point out that Karlin was a city in Lithuania, but it was a city that had both Hasidim and Misnagdim, which is relatively uncommon. For example, there aren't that many Vilna Hasidim around, but in Karlin, there were both many non-Hasidim and many Hasidim as well. In fact, the first Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, and we'll talk about it, I'm not going to do Hasidus tonight, but Karlin, in fact, the first name for Hasidim were Karliners, because they were the very first group. The first Karlina Rebbe was Rav Aaron of Karlin, and he was the Mechaber of a very beautiful, both the words on the Niggun of Ka Echseif. Have you ever seen Ka Echseif Friday night? So Ka Echseif, which is a song about yearning and Devekus and Hashem, is from Rav Aaron HaGadol, he's called Rav Aaron Karliner. And the Hasidus of Karlin Stolen is directly from Rav Aaron Karliner. But rest assured that Rav David Karliner had not very little to do with the Hasidim in Karlin. He was of the Misnagdim. Another, to go backwards a little bit, Rav David Karliner was already into the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century. But two of Rav Chaim Volozhiner's greatest Talmidim were two brothers from Karlin. Rav Yitzchak Karliner and Rav Yaakov Karliner. Rav Yaakov Karliner is the Mechaber of the Tshuvas Mishkenos Yaakov, one of the great Gedolei Achreinim. And Rav Yitzchak Karliner is the Mechaber of the Svarim Keren Ira. Again, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but trust me on this. The Keren Ira is considered to be one of the great, great Achreinim on many Masechtas of Shas, particularly Kachin, and the Mishkenes Yaakov is one of the Gedolei HaPaiskim, particularly in Hilchos Ervin. So even Bizman Hazeh, the Mishkenes Yaakov is used as a Paiskim in Ervin, and the Keren Ira is used in Limud of Kachin, right? So we have Rav Yaakov Karliner, Rav Yitzchak Karliner, Rav David Karliner, they're the Misnagdim. Then you have Rav Aaron Karliner, was the founder of the Hasidus, which later became Karlin Stolen, two adjacent cities. And we have the Karlina Tish here, and as a veteran of JLE Friday night extravaganzas to the Hasidish Tishes, I know, maybe you know too, that Karlin Stolen is the friendliest of the Tishes. So whenever people come who are not Hasidim, they go out of their way to make a Tish and explain things in English, so they still have a reputation for a tremendous amount of warmth. But if you looked at the Vilna Gaon's Cherem and the like, you'll actually find a Lashon. It's a Cherem against the Karliners, because the name of all the early Hasidim were in fact Karliners, because that was the first group of the Baal Shem Tov's Talmidim that gathered together. Sorry, did you want to say something?
Pinsk, Karlin, have anything to do with
that? Or? Well, Pinsk, again, Pinsk is the major city in the area. Karlin and Stolen are small cities, just like Slobodka is a small suburb of Kovna. But Slobodka got more famous than Kovna. So Pinsk was a well-known city too, but Pinsk was the main city in the area.
The name still stuck there.
Yes.
Nowhere else do they name Karlin stuck?
What, as Hasidim, you mean?
Yeah.
The name stuck really in most of Lithuania, including Vilna. That's what they were known. It didn't only stay there. I mean, Karliner then became it started off as all Hasidim were called Karliners. Then it was only those who lived in under the Karliner Rebbes. It then got more localized and more specific. Okay.
Are these Karliners all related, or?
No, not Dafka, because Karlin, remember, you know, last names in Europe were not a big deal. Last names were imposed by the Russian government in the middle of the 19th century. So some Jews took last names, some Jews didn't. In yeshivas, for example, it was common that they didn't use your last name. They used your city. So, for example, if you were from Brisk, you would be called Rav Shmuel the Brisker. You wouldn't be called by your last name. So the fact that somebody's called Rav David Karliner just meant he was from Karlin. It didn't mean he was related to anybody else from Karlin. But as I say, Rav David Friedman was, again, as I say, people thought he would be another Vilna Gaon. I mean, it was mamish ad kidei kach. People were machshav him a tremendous one. Well, he did become a tremendous Gaon, but if, for whatever reason, I mentioned the story last week, his svarim did not become as meforsam as one would have thought, because there are certain gedolim, it is interesting, there are certain gedolim whose primary hashba was when they were alive. In other words, it's not so much from their svarim, it's from who they were. Other gedolim pumfakir, when they were alive, they were not big mashpiyim, but their svarim are learned. Some gedolim were zocha to both. But David Karliner apparently was an enormous hashba when he was alive. The svarim, they're very wonderful svarim. In fact, in the room next door, one room over, there's a safe room of David Karliner. But the svarim, as I say, tended not to have the impact, that one would have expected from a gadol of that caliber. I mean, to say that Rav David Karliner was up with Rav Chaim, I mean, that's a tremendous statement. Yeah. Now, I had seen in one sefer that Rav David Karliner was 25 years older than Rav Chaim, but I saw in another sefer they were just 3 years apart. So one of them is mistaken, but I don't know which one. Okay. Now, that was the Karliner thing I wanted to talk about. Okay, I want to talk about what happened again after the closing of Volozhin. Remember that Volozhin was closed in the 1890s. The Netziv died around a year and a half afterwards. Rav Chaim left Volozhin because there was no yeshiva. He became the Rav of Brisk. He was Mamala, the Makam of his father, the Beis Halevi. And Rav Chaim remained Rav of Brisk till World War I. And he was nifter around World War I. Other yeshivas began to open. Now, some of these yeshivas were as mamish as old as Volozhin, kemat as old as Volozhin, but they didn't really get their Pearson till after Volozhin closed. Mir, for example. Mir was a very old yeshiva. Mir was founded in the 1840s, very shortly after Volozhin. But Mir did not become a major, big yeshiva until after Volozhin closed. But the yeshiva that is really the, if Volozhin is called the mother of yeshivas, the stepmother of yeshivas, or the next mother of yeshivas, is really Slobodka. We will see that Slobodka itself had a tremendous hashpa on Mir, on Tels, all of the yeshivas, primarily through the Alter of Slobodka. So I want to talk about that a little bit. Slobodka is a... Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky used to say that Slobodka is a masechta that a person should hover over. One should learn Slobodka, because there's a tremendous amount to learn. Slobodka was a small town, which was a suburb of a much larger city, and that larger city was a well-known city, a Choshevah city, Kovna. But Slobodka was not in Kovna, it was out of Kovna. And Slobodka was not started till around the late 1880s, like right before Volozhin closed, and the like. And to understand what Slobodka is about, we have to understand one pivotal personality, and that is Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, he was known by in Europe as Rav Nata Hirsch. People called him in Yiddish, Rav Nata Hirsch. But Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, who also was known as the Alter from Slobodka. The Alter of Slobodka was the most public face of Slobodka and also the most concealed private person. In fact, he used to sign his name Hatzofain, because Sofon, let's say Tzadik Pei Nun, it's a rearrangement of the letters Nosson Zvi Finkel. But, it's Sofon. And Sofon also means the hidden one, the concealed one. We know almost nothing, and there were people who were with him for 60 years. We almost know nothing about the first 35 years of his life. He was a Yosam, at a very young age. He wandered around different places. There are rumors that in fact he was heavily involved with Haskalah at various times, which made sense because bright young kids were preyed upon, as it were, to be taken by the Maskilim, to be sent to university and the like. But around the age of 35, he met Rav Yisrael Salanter. He was not a Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter, but he met Rav Yisrael Salanter. And Rav Yisrael Salanter saw he had a special koach in speaking, in public speaking, and his Sairus and Musar. And he urged the altar to, of course he wasn't the altar then, but he urged Rav Nachman Zvi Finkel to go around giving drushas in various places to be mechazik avodas Hashem. And then Rav Nachman Zvi Finkel began a relationship with Rav Yisrael Salanter's primary Talmud, the altar of Kelim, Rav Simcha Zissel. And then eventually he started establishing most of Satira in various places. A kailal here, a yeshiva here. His first major project was the Slobodka Kailel, which is a very chashuva thing. This was a Kailel, and a Kailel was a relatively new thing. There were always people who were learning all day, but the concept of creating a Mosad where very big Talmidei Chachamim would come and learn after they were married, and they would be supported. Until then, you were supported by your in-laws, but there was no concept of the Kahal supporting you. And he started this Kailel, and in the Slobodka Kailel, were very chashuv Talmidei Chachamim at various times, Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, Rav David Leibovich, that's the Chafetz Chaim's nephew, the father of Rav Henoch Leibovich, who was the Rashiv of Chafetz Chaim in America, the Divrei Yecheskel, who has Svarim on Sugis of Shas. He later became the Rosh Shiva of the Yeshiva Katana, but he was in the Kailal and the like. Rav David Rappaport, who became Rav Elchanan's Rosh Shiva in Baranovich. All of these were people in the Slobodka Kailal. Later, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Yitzhak Kuttner, my Rosh Shiva, Rav Yaakov Ritterman. Right? These were all graduates of the Slobodka Kailal. And that was the first project, the altar of Slobodka did, and he was responsible for the fundraising. The second thing he did was he established a yeshiva for single people, and that was a yeshiva in Slobodka called Knesses Yisrael. And the name Yisrael there is in memory of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who was Nifter already. And what's interesting is Slobodka did have a breakaway. There was another yeshiva in Slobodka called Knesses Beis Yitzchak. And the reason why there was a breakaway was, although it's hard for us to fully understand this, is that the altar of Slobodka was a Talmud of Rav Simcha Zissel and Rav Yisrael Salanter, at least indirectly, and Musar was a very important thing. But Musar had a lot of hisnagdus. A lot of the Rabbanim of Lita were against, now they weren't against Midos, it's not like saying, I'm against good Midos. Of course they weren't against that. Of course they learned Musar. When we say people are against Musar, what does it mean they're against Musar? Of course people tried to work on their midos, but they were against introducing things into the yeshiva other than Limud HaTorah itself. They felt it was becoming too Hasidish alike to talk about Musar and those things. And Rav Chaim, for example, was against Musar. Rav Chaim took the position that learning itself will make a person close to Hashem, and there's no need for other things. And they even had a little bit of a joke based on the Pesukim, because one of the things Rav Salanter did was, and we have it in Yerushalayim, he created a base Musar, a special base Medrash, where you only come in to learn Musar, right, to make a special thing. And some people were learning Musar 3 hours a day, a whole bunch of, it wasn't just like a few minutes a day. So they say, you see, you don't need a bias to have Musar, because it says, Beis Yisrael, Baruch Hu Hashem, Beis Aharein, Baruch Hu Hashem. So Yisraelim have a bias, the Kohanim have a bias, but then it says Yirei Hashem, Baruch Hu Hashem. It doesn't say Beis Yirei Hashem, Baruch Hu Hashem. To be a Yirei Shemaim, you don't need a bias. You don't need a special base Musar, they would say. All right. Be it as it may, though, because of the Machlokas on Musar, Slobodka had a breakaway with another yeshiva called Knesses Beis Yitzchak, and that was named after Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, who in Russia was the Posek Hador. He was considered to be the Gadol Hador itself. So, to understand what the altar was trying to do in Slobodka, I have to go back maybe to the beginning of the Musar movement. Maybe it's good to go back a little bit. We commonly say that the founder of the so-called Musar movements is Rav Yisrael Salanter. But we always have to ask ourselves, and we'll have the same question with Hasidus, is there is no such thing in Torah as a real Chiddush. Because if it's a real Chiddush, if you're really creating something totally new, then it can't be right. So, Rav Yisrael Salanter comes, and this started like in the 1840s. Right? He was a great guy in Halacha, he was a Rosh Hashiva Taka, he was a great guy. But all of a sudden he got up and he decided he wanted to create this Hesiris towards Musar. And Musar was about a lot of things. It was about increasing Yiras Shemayim. It was about increasing Zehiris in Mitzvahs. But most importantly, it was about creating a tremendous sensitivity in Bein Adam L'Chaveirei, in interpersonal relationships, in understanding that you can't allow what's called your frumkeit to degrade other people, to denigrate other people, to be mavaza other people. And Rav Yisrael Salanter wrote letters. He started off in Vilna, and his Talmidim came from that area. Vilna, Kovna, these were his cities. Vilna, Kovna. Eventually, he moved to France and Germany, where there are almost no Frum Yidden at all, to be involved in Kiruv Rechaikim. So Rav Yisrael Salanter's life falls into a lot of different segments. There was his pre-Musar life, in which became a great guy in Halacha. Then there was the Musar where he was working with his Chashev Talmidim, who became Gedalim, in Vilna and Kovna. And then we have the fact that he spent so much of his life without even religious Jews around at all, barely a minion, in France and Germany. And once in a while, he would spend like a month or two every year back in Vilna and Kovna to be much better with his Talmidim. The story is told, Rav Yisrael Salanter was a brilliant, brilliant Talmid Chacham. He was a Gai Notzen and an Eloi at a very young age, Bederech HaPilpul. But the story goes, no, he's called Salanter. His name is Lipkin, is his name, but he's called Salanter because he comes from the hamlet of Salant, which is right next to Vilna. Right, that's the idea, you go with the name. Rav Shmuel Salant was his cousin. Also Salant, even though neither of them was the last name. The story goes that Rav Yisrael Salanter, as a young teenager, was attracted to this anonymous person who nobody really knew a lot about, Rav Zundel of Salant. Rav Zundel of Salant was actually a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, which is two levels from the Gra. And Rav Zundel of Salant was what we would call a Nister. He was a worker. He never learnt in front of people. But when he saw Salanter noticed, he seemed to say there was something special about him. And he would spy on him. This was common. People would spy. Right? They would say, he'd spy. He would watch him. He'd see, what does he do? When he goes into the forest carrying, the wood, what does he do? And he would see all sorts of meisim, the way he davened, the way he would learn when nobody was watching, etc. The chesed he would do in the middle of the night. Many, many, many stories about Rav Zundel of Salant. And Rav Zundel eventually caught on that he's being watched by this kid. And he said to him, this is the story, he said to him, Yisrael, learn Musar, and you will be an Eved Hashem. And he told Rav Yisrael Salanter that the Mesilas Yesharim should be your guide in life. And Rav Yisrael Salanter said, that was a mahapecha, that was an inner turmoil for him. So the truth of the matter is, Musar, the idea of emphasizing Musar, didn't start with Rav Yisrael Salanter, it started from Rav Chaim Volozhiner, started from the Gra. In many ways. And if you look at the Gra's Perish on Sefer Mishlei, which is the only Sefer of the Gra that was published in the Gra's lifetime, you find that it's a book of Musar and Midos and how you work on yourself and the like. So be it as it may, what is Musar about? So here we make a big mistake because you're asking yourself this. In a yeshiva, we learn Musar. Do you have a Musar Seder here? I don't even know. Is there a Musar Seder in Samaritan? Yeah. Officially, how many minutes is it?
Half an hour.
So one might think, gee, are we going to have machloksim and start new yeshivas because people spend a half an hour, you know, like what exactly is going on? People were rioting. In fact, there's a whole mitzvah of Leib Chassman got beaten up in Tells because he wanted to introduce a Muster Seder. Like, you know, what's going on exactly? Of course, anyone that beats up a Mashgiach, you know, needs Muster. But you know, the thing is, so you have to understand that Rabbi Yisrael's plan for Muster was much more radical. It's gotten watered down, and now it's not a big deal. But he had a lot of plans. He was working for B'nai Taira, a certain Tachnis, and then he was working for Balabatam, business people, another type of Tachnis. And the concept was it had a lot of levels. One was learning certain Svarim, and most of those Svarim are from the Rishayim. No, they're not later. Shari Tshuva, Chovas HaLevavos, Mesila Shisharim is from the Ramchal. I mean, these are all pre-Revi Yisrael Salanter. Orchos Sadikim. That's one thing, learning certain Svarim. But then there were certain techniques. Revi Yisrael Salanter pointed out that sometimes a person has to absorb ideas in their mind, but other times they need to influence their emotions. And that's called hispilus, to stir up the emotion. And therefore, there was learning Musar Be'ian, in which you would think about things. But then there was hispilus, where, among other things, this is where it overlaps a little with Chassidus, in which you would take a single Maimer Chazal and say it to yourself 50 times, 100 times. Like, you know, Udiyishtamish Betaga Chalaf, right? He who uses the Kesher Shel Torah is Chayev Misa. And you would say it and say it. And even though you know what it said, but by saying it, you know, 100 times, it penetrates and influences you. So there was Musar Bolimud, there was Musar Behispilus, there was the concept of a base on Musar, where you would leave in the base medrash to go to a special bias. There were inyanim where certain people went into Golos, they went into isolation, we would call that his Breslov would call that his Hispidus, but that became part of the technique as well. There also was the concept of a Musar Vad, but a Musar Vad didn't mean you simply got together and learned Musar B'chavrusa. It really was what you might call spiritual group therapy. You would sit with chaverim, and you would actually say to your chaver, tell me, what did I do wrong this week? How could I be mesaken? And your job would be to tell your chaver how you thought they could be better, and vice versa. And they would discuss issues. Now, they have, Baruch Hashem, they actually have, both in Yerushalayim and in America too, these types of Musar Vadim. Of course, most of the people who go are women. Because men, we've already reached Shleimus, so we don't... But it's an interesting idea. People make a big mistake when they think Rabbi Yisrael's concept of Musar was just learning some Svarim. The Svarim were a hachana for practical eifanim of Tikkun Hamidas. This involved chaverim coming together. They would give each other Musar. This involved creating situations where a person would say, for example, I was nichshel this week because somebody did something to me and I lost my temper. And they would discuss etzus, how to rep. If you look in the second chelik of Ali Shur, right, Revolba wrote really a magnificent sefer of really Musar. Revolba really was the last real Baal Musar of our door. And if you look, the first chelik of Ali Shur is what you might call the theoretical ideas of Musar. The second chelik, which is a fat chelik, is vadim. Vadim, meaning he actually gives you like scripts to hold vadim, like how do you hold one of these things. And he even says in the second chelik, if this isn't what you're willing to do, if you're not willing to do this lemaisa dika work, he says, don't look at the sefer. It's a very different, but you, just out of curiosity, you may want to look at it. To see that, he says, you sit down, you start discussing, okay, how many times did you get angry this week? And why? And the concept is by understanding yourself, right? Understanding what makes me angry. When do I get upset? Right? So a person has shlita, because the insight of Musar is, the more you understand yourself, the more you're able to be misgaber over nisyanus. So Musar was not like a 15-minute thing. Musar could involve quite a lot of cheshben hanefesh, working with groups, working with yechidim. There were batei Musar for balabatim. So you can imagine that the rabbanim in Lithuania, who were used to the concept is, hey, you're supposed to learn all day. didn't really like. What is this person doing? He's coming in with all of these new ideas, and some of it was connected to Freudian psychology even. In fact, there's a whole machlokas if Rabbi Yisrael was influenced by any aspects of Freudian psychology. I mean, the dates don't quite fit, actually. He seemed, if anything, Freud might have been influenced by Yisrael Salanter. But Yisrael Salanter certainly talks about the unconscious as a motivator in people and the like. So Yisrael Salanter's program was a fairly radical program. And he started with Talmidim, who were great Talmidei Chachamim, and then he spread it to the Hamonam, Balabatim, and then he went, as I said, to France and Germany, where he was involved, not just in Musar to Frum people, but in Kiruv Rechaikim as well. It was amazing. He was an outreach worker, mamish, at a time when nobody was doing Kiruv Rechaikim. I mean, in Russia and Poland, there was no concept of Kiruv Rechaikim, because you were either from, or if you weren't from, you were a from person who rebelled. I mean, so you knew enough and you rejected it. There was no concept of Tinok Shenishba. But in Germany and France, you had Tinok Shenishba, and Yisrael Salanter was involved. In fact, all right, so this was a fairly radical program, and some yeshivas were started with Musar, and some yeshivas had hisnagdus to Musar. Rav Chaim, as I mentioned, was against this Musar program, because Rav Chaim Tainis, that Torah itself will make you a shalem. And he pointed to the Yushalmi. The Yushalmi says beferish that even if we're out there about Azara and we learn Torah, Hamaor Sheba, the light of the Torah, Machzirai Lemutav, will bring you back to Hashem. That was Rav Chaim's position. The Chafetz Chaim, who is, of course, I mean, Chafetz Chaim is after Yisrael Salanter, but when this fight was going on, the Chafetz Chaim is said to have remarked that Rav Chaim was incorrect, because he said, Torah is the diet of a healthy neshama. When your neshama is healthy, the Torah will keep you healthy. But when your neshama is sick with taivas and midos raos, just like a sick person needs medicine in addition to Torah, a sick person needs Musar and Yiras Shamayim in order to make them healthy so they can absorb Torah. So this was a fundamental machlokes, and to some degree we even have it today. The fundamental machlokes is Limud HaTorah itself the Refuas HaNefesh? Or do we say no? Limud HaTorah, of course, you can quote a Chazal, Barasi Yetzirah, Barasi Torah Tavlin, which literally means the Torah is medicine. Okay, but there are other Chazals. The Gemara in Shabbat says, Yiras Hashem Hi Yetzirah, that the Torah can only be in a person who has a Yiras Shemayim. Right? So they're different Mamore, you could fight with different Mamore Chazal, but these were two different Hashkafas. Rav Chaim's Hashkafa was, to a large degree, that Limud HaTorah will be Mesake Midais Taivais. Rabbi Yisrael saw in his door, and of course he saw it empirically, he saw there were plenty of people who were learning who didn't have midos, who were balei gaiva, who were angry, who were mavaza people, who were not zorin ben adam mechavera. And keep in mind, by the way, this also fits Haskalah, because here's the pshat. Some of the taina of the maskilim was, what is so good about this Yiddishkeit? What is good about this yeshivas? You have people who are rude. You have people who are not kind. And I mean, not that the maskilim were such great tzaddikim, but at least externally, they looked like they had all the manners and refinements and the like. So once again, just like Voloshin was a response to Haskalah, Musar was to some degree a response to Haskalah, to make people gentlemen, to make them mention, to make them people of Midos Tovos. Now, I'm not saying that was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's primary objective. It wasn't just to fight Haskalah. The primary objective was he saw this as a nechitzas in Avodas Hashem. And by the way, just to tell you, in the Gros Perish on Mishlei, there's an amazing thing. Nobody, of course, could ever accuse the Gra of not being Machshav Limud HaTorah, right? If there's any person in history that we cannot accuse of being Mazalzel in learning, it's the Vilna Gaon, who learned 20 hours a day and slept four increments of a half an hour. In fact, once he went to a chasna, which he did very rarely, he went to a chasna in some city and he slept 32 minutes instead of 30 minutes. And he said he could never go back to that city again. They took away 2 minutes of Torah learning. He called it the Sleepy City. But what happened was, 40 years later, he had to go through the city again, and he only slept 28 minutes. So the city was so besimcha, and he said, Baruch Hashem, we gave the guy back. He gave the guy back his 2 minutes. So everyone knows, it's Yaduah Meforsam, the Graz Hasmada, and the Graz Shlita over Kol HaTorah Kula. But listen to what the Graz says in Mishlei. Chazal say, Torah is compared to water. Not everyone knows that. Why is Torah compared to water? So the standard explanation is just like water goes from high to low, the Torah leaves the Baal Gaiva and goes to the Anaf, which itself is a Musar idea, or just like water nourishes and supports life, the Torah gives life. The Gaon says an amazing thought, Mamish Apella. The Gaon says, when you pour water on ground, what's ever in the ground, the water is going to make grow. If there's wheat in the ground, you'll get wheat. What if there's poisonous weeds in the ground? You're going to get poison. The Gras says, Pella, think of it. Torah will accentuate whatever it is that's in you. Meaning, a person has midos tovos, a person has rachmanas, a person has gemilas chasadim, Torah is going to be mashlimim. Indeed. This is the chiddush. If chas v'shalom, a person has midos rois, the Gras says the Torah is gonna make him worse. In fact, that's actually the way he interprets a chazal. Chazal say, Zocha, if you're Zaycha, the Torah is a sam chayim, is an elixir of life. Loi Zocha, if you're not Zaycha, the Torah is sam mavis. Now, how could that be? Why would Torah be sam mavis? Well, why would Torah be poison? I mean, I could say maybe the Torah is not going to elevate me, but why would it be a poison? The Gras says, Torah will develop like water, whatever's in you. That's a truly remarkable position, and maybe it's a revolutionary position. I'm not sure if the yeshivas fully would agree with that statement, but it's the Gras. The Gras says, a person that's a Baal Gaiva will become more Gaivadik when he learns. A person who is selfish will become more selfish when he learns. Rav Yisrael Galanter says, if you want the Torah to elevate you and make you close to Hashem, you have to be misakin midas. Now again, Rav Chaim was chaylik in this. Rav Chaim was chaylik. And there were great gedolim who were chaylik, the Chazon Ish. This is much later. The Chazon Ish was not in favor of the Musar room, but he once said the following. He once said, he's against the Shitas HaMusar, but he's more against the misnagdim to the Shita Samus. Meaning, he was makir that the Shita Samus came from Yiras Shemayim. Some of the misnagdim were simply causing trouble. So he says, he's more makshiv the Bali Musar than the misnagdim to the Musar, even though his own Shita is like those that were misnagate to Musar. And the truth of the matter is, even the great Bali Musar actually patred some people from Musar. It says that in Slobodka, which was a Musar yeshiva, the Alter Slobodka patred Rav Isser Zalman from Musar Seder. He told Rav Isser Zalman, you don't need Musar, you're Mida. you've reached a Shlemus, so there was this concept that not everybody needed it, but most people needed those types of tikkunim. Yeah.
It's true
when
they say that about Stadler, that also he used to be a Musar now itself.
Yeah. Well, the truth of the matter is, we'll see. If you look at the classic Musar Svarim, remember, are all pre the Musar movement. They're from the Rishonim, Shari Tshuva. Aruchos Tzadikim, Shari Tshuva from the Rishonim, Chavos HaLevavos is from the Rishonim, Mesilas Yesharim is from the Ramchal, etc. But if you look at the Svarim of the Bali Musar, of Yisrael's Talmidim, I mean, they're all based on Chazals, right? I mean, Michtam Eliyahu, whatever it is. They take Chazals, they take Midrashim, I mean, they take Torah, and they try to bring it up. So, Rav Yisrael went from place to place to try to create this Musar structure. He was pretty much liach in yeshivas. Slobodka became a Musri yeshiva. Telz became a Musri yeshiva. Mir became, of course, a great Musri yeshiva, Rabbi Ruchem, and the like. There were some breakaways. Knesset Beis Yitzchak and Slobodka was non-Musri, but still, people would go back and forth. In fact, Rav Aaron Cutler, as a bacher, was a Talmud in Knesset Beis Yitzchak, but he would go to hear the altar of Slobodka. So people were going back and forth in all of these in Yom Kippur.
Is anyone today that's against Musar?
Any Chashev Gadol that's against Musar? I don't think so, but the reason is, it's not so much... Well, there are two reasons why. Number one, I think in the course of time, what the Chafetz Chaim said, we see is true, that without Tikkun HaMidos, our neshamas are sick, and we need that. But number two, Musar is not as extreme as it was. Now, maybe that's a big concern, but the concept is Musar in yeshivas is so watered down that Mimela, the reason for the Hisnagdus, doesn't apply today, because it's not such a all-encompassing thing. Rav Yisrael made it a much more encompassing thing, which would have been a more radical change.
Why aren't briskers against it?
Are briskers still against it? I think they're against it because Minag of Hasein B'Yadayim. In other words, I think they're basically against it because they were against it, so now they're still against it. But the sibais to be against it are not really nogeya today. Rav Chaim, again, I mean, brisk in many ways is its own chassidus. Interestingly enough, you know, the great brisk, which is the fortress of Misnagdim, turned the Shalshelis HaBrisk into Chassidus Rebbe. So like whatever, you know, Rav Chaim did, we have to do exactly, even though it's not the same situation. You know. But, yeah.
Would it be true to say that the Misnagdim won? So the way we're explaining it is that the Musar we have today is really has no shaykhus to what they used to do.
Yeah.
And those Misnagdim were back then anyway, which people used to learn. So instead of learning it in their house, learn it for a half hour.
I think that's so. But at least we do give lip service, and we try in a small way to emphasize the chashivas of Tikkun HaMidos and Bein Adam L'Chaverei. Now, are we working on it the way if Rav Yisrael Salanter would walk into our yeshivas, would Rav Yisrael say, oh, this is, or the altar of Slobodka, this is, you know, what I wanted to create? No, I don't think he... I think on one hand he'd be very happy that there are so many B'nai Torah learning, much more than we're in Europe. That is true. But Kamus, there are many more people learning than ever learns in Europe. But in Eichus, and in work, in Yegiyah, and in Tikkun HaMidos, the Emes says, we're back to what the Mesilas Yesharim says. Mesilas Yesharim, who again was way before Rav Yisrael Salanter, he actually writes that people are mezalzel in the Inyan called Yiras Hashem. Ad kidei kach, that when you see a person who's working on Yiras Hashem, you think he's a shaita, you think he's not smart enough to learn Gemara or whatever it is. That's why he's working on Yiras Hashem. And the Emes is, what he's describing is in fact very, very true. Very true. Right? So it's a chaval. It's a chaval. You can actually say in many ways, on one hand, the Torah world is makir, the chashivas of Musar, but they don't do it. Now, that's what Revolba, who really was the last great, real Baal Musar, in that way, try to do with the base Musar and everything else. So, you know, as I say, and women still are involved in it. You know, the idea of the Musar Vat, which Rav Yisrael made for men, not for women, but women are involved in the Vat. And it's an amazing, useful thing. Rav Yisrael's Hashkafa was this. It's a very good insight. He says, you got to work on small things, because that prepares you for big things. So a lot of times in a Musar Vat, you would bedafka take a kleinigkeit. You would talk about a trivial thing. You would talk about the fact that, you know, I went through a door and I closed the door, you know, when somebody was going through it. And the concept is, if you learn how to deal with small problems, you then get the kochas hanefesh to deal with big issues. So the Musar Vads today, for example, often talk about small things. In other words, I'm giving you an example from women's spots. And a woman is not going to come in and say, my daughter has cancer, what do I do? A woman's going to say, my daughter broke a bottle of milk and I got angry. And the concept is, because if you learn how to deal with these shilas, you develop kaychas hanefesh that give you a kayak to deal with other things. Yeah.
Is there a source for that, that you learn how to deal with small things, like it's a
problem? Well, you see it. Well, it is a svara, but you also see it. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses the manhigim of Klal Yisrael from shepherds. If you know how to work with sheep, you know things like that. So start with smaller things, and then you learn. Yeah.
Well, what was going on before the Muslim movement?
Okay, so what's going on before the Muslim movement is a lot of things are going on. Actually, you have Hasidus is happening, and Zionism is happening, and yeshivas.
In terms of learning the Muslim itself, like
okay, the Svarim were around, and people would study them occasionally. Particularly before Yamim Narayim or Elul. Elul always had that chashivas of Hisayiris for tshuva, but there wasn't the concept of public shiurim in it, and there wasn't the notion of base musar, and there was not a special thing for Balabatim. Balabatim learned Ein Yaakov or Chaye Yodam or Shulchan Aruch. There wasn't the concept of creating musar in particular.
Because they didn't need it as much?
Well, Rabbi Yisrael said they actually did need it, but they didn't think they needed it. And as a result, Rabbi Yisrael saw that in his lifetime he felt there was a tremendous yirida. Now some say, this is hard to know, that Rabbi Yisrael was actually influenced by tremendous machloksim that he had seen some, that he had seen the lack of midos tearing apart. He never said what the maisa was. Oh well, but I'll tell you what the maisa. I'll tell you what the maisa. And now that I'm talking, I actually remember. Rabbi Yisrael was appointed to be, this is his pre-Musar days, in his early 20s, he was appointed to be a Rosh Yeshiva in Vilna. A very chashuva shteller in Vilna. And Ebbis, what happened was, I don't know all the details, but what happened was his predecessor had gotten fired. Rabbi Yisrael didn't know it. Like his predecessor got fired to make room for Rabbi Yisrael. And that created a shrekelcha machlekes of accusations, and people said, you're stealing a position. And he resigned. He left because he said he couldn't be part of taking away somebody's parnasa and being mavaza, a Talmud Chacham, and the like. But some say anecdotally, we're not for sure, that one of the mashpiyim, that he saw this as his tachlis tafkid in life, was he saw that even among people who were lomdei Torah, there was a tremendous amount of jealousy and anger and lack of derech eretz towards other people. And he saw this as a chilul Hashem, because if even the Talmidei Chachamim didn't have these midos, so what are people going to look at? They're going to look at a Talmud Chacham and say, why should I be a Talmud Chacham? Why should my son be a Talmud Chacham? I'll send him to university and he'll be a gentleman and the like. So he saw this as a tremendous sakana for the kiyum of Klal Yisrael, as well as a maniyah in Avodas Hashem. So this is the story. We don't have proof of this. They say the same with the Chafetz Chaim later, that the reason the Chafetz Chaim devoted himself to Shmiras Halashim is because also when he was young, he saw a whole shtutz torn apart because of Lashon Hara. So he kind of saw how Lashon Hara was machriv, a kehila. So he said he wanted to be misakin that. Right? So often you'll have some events that gives a person his service to do something about it.
And if someone nowadays wants to go on that path, like where would he go?
Which path? Musar path? Well, Revolba's base Musar is still around. And in fact, there's a little bit of a resurgence. Who is the fellow's name? There's a fellow, his name is Rev Miller, I think. He translated in English Rav Yisrael Salanter's Orally Yisrael. Was it? What is his name? Miller, yeah. And he has a website. You're not supposed to look at the internet. But it's called, I think, the Musar Foundation, the Slanter Foundation. But I would also go to the base Musar here if you want. I mean, the base Musar in, where is it, Sereskin? Was it Revolba's base Musar? I mean, it's still here. And they have various people who come and the like. Now, a little interesting, I'm going out of order here. But Musar was not Hasidus. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's Musar did not bring in Hasidus and Machshavas. It was pure, almost brutal Tikkun HaMidos work. And brutal meant you were very, very honest. You know, it was not a feel-good. The idea was not to make you feel good, but to understand my motivations, that I'm motivated by Gaiva, even when I'm doing mitzvahs, to look into myself, to understand what made me tick. And Hasidus was not in that. The first Baal Musar who brought in Hasidus and integrated Hasidus and Musar was Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler was much later. And that was Rav Dessler's Chiddush. And it says when Rav Dessler brought Musar in first in England and then in Panovich, his old Chaverim, the Bali Musar from Europe, they didn't like it. They wanted to check him out. They wanted to, what is he saying? Tanya and Rav Tzadok and Svas Emes. What is this? The Rebbe never said these things. And to this day, well, I mean, someone told me, maybe I shouldn't say it, but I'll say it just so you know, that when Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein, who was a pure Baal Musar, became the Mashgiach in Panovich after Rav Dessler's Patira, it doesn't sound like Rav Cheskel. It's hard for me to believe that he said it this way, because it doesn't sound like Rav Cheskel, but he said he has to de-Desslerize the place, because there was like too much Hasidische Hafshpos in Panovich. Okay, but again, it doesn't sound like a Rav Cheskel type of Lashon, L'chala Papas. But nevertheless, there was a certain Hisnagdus to what Rav Dessler was doing. But Rav Dessler is a little bit of a Chiddush in Musar, because he brought in Hasidus so much. In fact, in one of Rav Dessler's great talents was he tried to show that certain Yesoides cut across the board. You see them in Musar, in Hasidus, in Kabbalah. So in one of the Mamorim, Michtam Eliyahu, it's like simultaneous translations, a Rosetta Stone. He takes a Yesod, and he says, this is how Kabbalah describes it. This is how Hasidus describes it. This is how Musar describes it. So you see the same idea expressed in three different Lashinas. So you understand that all of this is emes, but they express it in different lashon, different vocabulary. So he actually takes a machshava and translates it: Kabbalah, Hasidus, and Musar. So anyway, Rishon Salanter, as I say, was maimed many talmidim in Europe and in Lithuania, and then he went to France and Germany. Where, okay, I'll get to that later, but I want to talk about what he did in Europe first. He had many talmidim. Some of them were became Rashi Yeshiva. Some of them became businessmen. He had talmidim who became Chashuva Balabatim, who were Kovei Itim L'Torah. Of course, keep in mind the Balabatim, there were Balabatim in Europe who learned, 12 hours a day. I mean, there were such categories. But I want to mention three of his talmidim that one should be aware of, because they each of them had different shitas. They say the sign of a great Rebbe is each of his talmidim are different, because he identifies that which is miyuchet in their teva. Just like Rav Chaim's Talmidim were so different in their derech of learning. And Rav Yisrael's three Talmidim, one is the altar of Kelim, one is the altar of Nevardik, I'll mention four. One is Rav Itzel, or Rav Yitzchak Blazer, who is called Rav Itzel Petterberger, because he was the Rav of St. Petersburg. And the other is Rav Naftali Amsterdam, who was not from Amsterdam, but his last name was Rav Naftali Amsterdam. And then we'll also have the altar of Slobodka. The Talmid Mufak, the most senior, the oldest, and the one that was with Rav Yisrael the longest, was the person who was called the altar of Kelim, the old man of Kelim, and his name was Rav Simcha Zissel Brody, or Brody. And he started a yeshiva in Kelim, which was a yeshiva katana. It was for like 13-year-olds and the like. The nakuda of the altar of Kelim was the concept to be margil a person in controlling, in discipline, in basically not doing anything without a cheshbon. The notion was discipline, shviras hamidais, and discipline, and not simply giving into whatever emotion you feel at a given moment in time. And that's why he wanted kids when they were young. He says, by the time I get an 18-year-old, it's too late. I want a 12-year-old. I want a 13-year-old. We could be margil. Because of this, in Kelim, there were all sorts of exercises to be mesaken midas. For example, in Kelim, you had to get up. There was a Seder in the middle of the night for only 5 minutes. We have night Seder. I don't remember the exact time, but let's say from 1 o'clock to 1:10 or 1:05. Now, for Shteitzach, and you couldn't make up the time. So for Shteitzach, that means you have to get up exactly. They gave you whatever time you needed. But that was to be margil a person in chashivas of zman. In Kelim, if you looked around while you were davening, if there was a loud noise, they gave you a kanas, you had to pay money. Like they say that there was explosions, whatever happened in Kelim, you know, you're looking ahead. After a tinus, the food they served was fish with little bones in it. Why? Because after a tinus, we normally eat very quickly. But this is margul a person. No, you have to eat slowly. You don't have to shove it in because you're hungry. When you got a package from home or a letter from home, which was a big thing in Lita, you weren't allowed to open it for 24 hours. You don't have to watch it. You're like an animal. Okay, I got to see it. You wait. Put it away. You wait. The whole thing was the concept of learning how to be patient, learning how to be deliberate, not getting upset. Menuchas HaNefesh was a great, great quality. Don't talk until you think about what you're going to say. Now, Rav Volba, who indirectly is from Kelim, because Rav Yerucham of Mir was a Talmud of Kelim, so Kelim had a big hashpah on Mir in particular. If you ever spoke to Rav Volba, I was lucky to hear him a few times. I was never lucky to talk to him. You know, it's interesting that when you ask Rav Volba a question, it was actually very hard to have a conversation with him. It was a little strange. Because you say something to him, and there's these pauses. He would like not say anything for 30 seconds. And then say, and you're not sure, did he hear you? Or, you know, are we still talking? You don't know. Because this was the shita. You don't just talk. You think about what you're going to say first. Right? And there was another union of kavod also, that when you're finished, you don't end the conversation until the other person says he's ready. So, you know, you said something and he'll just wait until you say that, you know, I have nothing else to say, you know, whatever. All these nyanim of kavod, which sometimes are actually is a little difficult because we're not used to it, right? But that was Kelim. So the whole union of Kelim was to learn to be deliberate, not to be excited, not to be agitated, to learn to be calm, no matter what the matzav was. And Kelim had many. As I said, the altar of Kelim was the most senior Talmud of Yisrael Salander. Yisrael Salander called him my chacham. He was my wise person, because he was a great psychologist in terms of understanding motivation and the like. Now, he had a shita. Kelim had rich kids and poor kids, like any yeshiva. And he had a shita that the rich kids couldn't get any special treatment from home, or they had to share it with everybody. So a mother came to him and said, you know, Baruch Hashem, you know, we have money. Like, why can't I give my son something nice? So he said the following. He didn't just give a firm reason about, tivus. He said it in a deeper way. He said, you know, if you could tell me, if you can guarantee that your son will be able to live at this standard his whole life, then go ahead. But life goes up and down. And if you don't prepare a person to be mistapek b'mu'atz, then they're going to be broken when things happen later. Now this is much deeper than the stam frum thing that passes for muster, because what the Altar of Kelim is basically saying is a person has to learn to be makabel whatever life gives him, besimcha, with equanimity, without tainus on the Ribono Shel Olam. And when a person gets spoiled in Gashmias, it's not just the fact that he's a Baal Taiva, which is bad enough, but he loses the ability to be makabel when Hashem gives him. And he says, and that's a very destructive thing. And this is really true. I've heard it said that, I'm not saying this halacha l'maisa, but they say that mothers should not, again, this is not halacha l'maisa, but al pi kelim, it's nitin me'amir, that mothers shouldn't cook such fancy food for their kids. Because then the kids come to yeshiva, and, you know, nothing's good. They complain. The person should get used to simple things, and then they come to yeshiva, everything's fine. Right? Okay. The yeshiva should serve fancy food. Well, yeah. Well, listen, that's going to come out of my salary, you know. So I got to be careful about that. But that was the avoda of Kelim. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, as a young bacher, spent 6 months in Kelm. Actually, he said he once got in trouble. Oh, yeah, yeah, this is the Maisa he says. This is a very, very funny Maisa. It was Kriyas HaTaira. And the Gabbai thought there was no Kohen. So Yaakov turned around and he recognized the Kohen. So he said, no. There's the Kohen. So on one hand, they called up a Kohen, but they canceled Rav Yaakov. They said, hey, what are you looking around? What are you saying? You know, just looking around in the middle of Babylon. So Rav Yaakov said about Kelim, he says, every person should spend 6 months in a place like Kelim, but no more than 6 months. He says it wasn't. It was a little too tough. It was kind of like a spiritual boot camp. And it was a little bit of a difficult matzav. And they have all sorts of stories about Kelim that somebody left, a visitor. A visitor left an umbrella there or a cane there and came back, you know, 20 years later and the cane was in exactly the same place. Nobody moved it. And the like, who's push it there, and the like. The people who cleaned up the Beis Medrash and served food, that was the most chashuv thing. The Altar of Kelim would give out kibudim. And he says, the most chashuv kavod is to serve B'nai Taira. That's like avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. So if you were a waiter or a cook in the kitchen, that was the greatest chashivas. Only the most chashuv people got that. And of course, Sefer Panim Yafas, if anybody came, a person says he came to Kelim once as a bacher, and somebody greets him and says, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? So good to see you. So he's figuring, geez, this is somebody I know from my hometown. Maybe it's somebody I know, but I haven't seen, I don't know who it is. All right, so he figured he just didn't recognize the person. And then another person goes up the same way, and then another person, and another person. And then he realizes that every single person in Kelim are being morgul in the midah of Mekabel Kol Adam, B'Sefer Panim Yafas. Like, how are you? How are you? Good to see you. I hope you know. Yeah.
Why did this kind of thing die out? I don't understand.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. Doesn't it sound sad? You miss it, huh? well, first of all, keep in mind, I mean, let me put it this way. The effects on us is so wonderful. Gee, I would love to have somebody go. On the other hand, it takes a lot of avoda that every time somebody comes in, you know, you're a miskaber and you say, how are you doing? And Rizal Salantra said, he had a famous saying. This is an amazing statement. He says, a person's face is a rishus harabim. What's the pshat? I'm sad. I'm upset. But what? But it's rishus harabim. I can't dig a bore of rishus harabim. So I'm upset. I'm supposed to show people how upset I am. He says, no, I got to cover up my boris. I got to cover up, you know, all of those things. So the altar of Kelim was very, very great in this. And his talmidim and talmidei talmidim, Rav Elia Lapian, well, again, not directly, but through the generations, Rav Elia Lapian, Rav Yeruchim, Rav Chaskel, Rav Dessler, although Rav Dessler was Mechadish on his own with Hasidus, but Rav Dessler comes from Kelim, right? So Rav Volba, indirectly, because Rav Volba was a very close Talmud of Rav Yeruchim, right? So Kelim, probably, of all of the branches of Musar, as Musar, Kelim had the great Ashpa. And the truth is, the altar of Slobodka, although he created a lot of Chidushim himself, was a Talmud of Rav Simcha Zissel, not Rav Yisrael. The Alter knew Rav Yisrael, but he was much younger, and his Rebbe was Simcha Zissel. And for many years, the Alter of Slobodka would go to Kelm. Amazing thing, he was the head of Slobodka, but he went to Kelm for Elul and Yom Naran, until the Alter of Kelm kicked him out. They got into a machlekes over different issues, because the Alter of Slobodka did have a different shita, as we'll see. But still, Rav Simcha Zissel was his Rebbe. Yeah.
It must have, like we get an issue sometimes about Limud HaTorah. Would that fall under this category of Musar, or this is just strictly a Midas?
Well, Limud HaTorah was certainly part of it too, but in many, many ways, Rav Yisrael Salanter's target audience were people who already were Shakua in Limud. I mean, you didn't have to tell a guy in Slobodka got to learn. I mean, that's what they did. That's what they wanted to do. Now, again, as the Dairis get weaker, you know, we have to talk about that too. But primarily it was about Midas. Primarily it was all about Midas. So that was Kelm. Now, there were other things in Kelm. Kelm was a bit radical as well. Kelm, there was a big emphasis on looking good, dressing nicely. because the altar of Kalim felt that that was an aspect of Kiddush Hashem. A person shouldn't look like vagabonds or whatever it was. And this is less known. The altar of Kalim at various points tried to introduce some type of limud echol in the yeshiva as well. The very thing that closed the legend, the altar of Kalim thought within a miskeres of Musar, you could have limud echol as well. And it really was an attempt within the yeshiva world to have limud echol. He didn't do it in Kalim, he did it in another school, Grobin. He had an experimental school to try to do that. That closed down shortly afterwards. There was too much opposition in Lithuania to it. There was a big emphasis on culture, in some ways, on dress, on derech eretz. They even say the altar of Kelm's son owned a dog, because a dog was something a gentleman had. Just to show that you could be a person who mixes in the world, Ma'urav ben Abrios, and still be Makusher to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That was part of an idea of Kiddush Hashem. Again, that aspect also kind of vanishes a little bit. But I think it vanishes a little bit because the truth is, as B'nai Torah grow larger and larger, maybe there's less of a... People think there's less of a need to make the Reishim on the outside, although that's not entirely true. Yeah.
Isn't that a steer?
Which one?
A steer to, like, be mustapik with Mumot, and then... Be not
gashmi,
thinking the same time, you're trying to look good.
It absolutely is a stira, unless your kavanos are l'shem shemayim, meaning on
the
one hand,
the outside look, onlooker.
Well, mistapik b'muat. Well, again, it all depends how it's interpreted. I mean, people talk about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's appearance was a very striking, noble, regal appearance. But, you know, it shows that, you know, when people get to know you, they see what it is that you're machshiv in life, and they see this is just to be mekadesh Hashem, to honor Hashem. It's not for your own she'ifa, for taivas, and everything else. But even if you look at the pictures of Mir, if you look at the pictures of the guys in Mir, you know, they're all, even though many of them were very, very poor, but they dressed. Now, this was for two reasons, two different reasons why the dress was a big issue, even though it sounds a little funny to us. One issue was for the Kiddush Hashem, B'enei, other Yidden, and the other was to give the B'nei Torah themselves, and again, this runs a little bit of a contradiction, a certain chashivas, that they shouldn't look at themselves as so misgain as compared to the people who go to college or whatever it is. A person needs a certain amount of chizik. Now, let me just mention, so this is Rav Simcha Zissel, and as I say, Kelim was the spawning grounds of many, many of the Bali Musar of Mir and Tells and Slobodka as well. Now, the other Talmud I want to mention is there's Rav Zissel, Rav Simcha Zissel, and then I mentioned the altar of Navarro. Okay, let me mention the altar of Slobodka, because I want to mention how he broke with Kelm. The altar of Slobodka is not a direct Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter, but he was a direct Talmud of the altar of Kelm, and he was very, very close to Rav Simcha Zissel. But he ultimately changed emphasis. And when he started Slobodka and the Kailal and the Yeshiva. And what's interesting is, Kishem, that Rav Yisrael Salanter, you know, may have become a Baal Musar because of one remark of Rav Zindel Salant. It is said that the altar of Slobodka heard, the first shmooze he heard from Rav Simcha Zissel was Kaiveya, the altar's whole Musar approach for the rest of his life. And that was a shmooze about Godless Ha'adam, the greatness of a human being. The fact that a person is made B'Tselem Elokim. And therefore, the altar of Slobodka spends, will come out all of his talks, emphasizing the chashivas of a person. Because he saw, when a person understands his potential, then mimele you're going to behave a certain way. Because you're not going to besmirch, you're not going to dirty the godless within. Now, chas v'shalom, this could lead to gaiva, if it's taken the wrong way. But he emphasized this notion of godless, the greatness of a human being. So, Kelim was much more into what you might call some type of psychoanalysis. You know, I have chesronos, I gotta be eiker my chesronos. Slobodka was more of a shita of working on the ore that's within you and by working on the ore, mimela the chayshech is nistanik. This was godless Adam. Now, what's interesting is the following. What's interesting is, in Kelim, almost everybody, maybe 100% of people who came out of Kelim, came out from and committed in Bali Musar. Slobodka, we have a strange mix. Slobodka produced the greatest Gedolim, Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rav Shach was a Talmud of Slobodka for at least a short while. He knew the altar well. Rav Reuven Grzovsky, right? Many of the Gedolim who came to America certainly are from Slobodka. But Slobodka, like Volozhin, also produced quite a lot of apikorsim, quite a lot of great, great scholars who left the derech, as we say. Harry Wolfson, probably didn't hear of Harry Wolfson. Harry Wolfson was a Talmud of Slobodka, Tzvi Hirsch Wolfson. And he became totally non-religious, but he became a great, great professor in Harvard, and he wrote many, many books on Jewish philosophy, the Kuzari, the Rambam, he analyzed it, and he never married. It's amazing. I mean, the guy was a masmid in philosophy. I include Islamic, Jewish, Christian. I mean, he would lock himself up in a room in Harvard, and he would pore over these books, 18 hours a day. I mean, and he even said that his derech in learning philosophy he got from Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka. He says, he would say, Kol Yamav, he says, I'm applying the Slobodka derech to philosophy. And the like. But he was not Picard. I mean, he was sad about it. He was sad about a lot of things. He had a lot of sentimental attachment to the old yeshiva ways. But Harvard was his yeshiva. No question about it. So you have Harry Wolfson, you have other people as well. So it's interesting that you see what's going on here. When you create a maisad that stresses the uniqueness of every person, and every person has infinite potential. So the upside is you're going to produce the greatest gedolim, and you'll produce great, great scholars who also follow their own way. As opposed to Kelim, which wasn't looking to create here and here, everybody was here, right? So shitas were very, very different. By the way, one of the shitas of the Alter of Kelim was nobody had a title in Kelim. So when he was called up for an Ali, he was the Alter of Kelim. He was the head of the whole Mosad. He was only called up Simcha Zissel Ben, no Harav, no Moreno. And once a Bacher called him up Harav or Moreno, and he didn't come up. He says, no. He says, there are no titles here. We work together in Avodas Hashem. And just to give you an example of how the Alter of Kelim Shita, going back to that, that you work on little things, and the big things take care of themselves. Rev Dessler gives us an account of the closing of Kelim, the Nazis, when the Nazis massacred Kelim. So it talks about how the last Talmidim of Kelim went to their deaths al Kiddush Hashem, and how it was calm, nobody cried, nobody was nervous. They just said, it's time, we have to prepare ourselves, we have to. And there was a tremendous menuchas hanefesh, even in going to their deaths by the Nazis. And Rav Dessler writes about it because his family, he was already out, but his immediate family were murdered, but he got an account of how they went. There were some survivors, he got an account of how they went. Al Kiddush Hashem. So, if the idea of the altar of Kelim was self-discipline and self-mastery, the shita of the altar of Slobodka was godless ha'adam. But the altar of Slobodka, in many, many ways, was very, very strange, very difficult person to understand. His whole background was very mysterious. Nobody knew where he came from, as it were. He didn't even have an official position in the yeshiva. Who was the altar? Was he Rosh Yeshiva? No. Was he Mashgiach? No. There was somebody else who was Mashgiach. He just was. He was there. He happened to have founded the yeshiva, but that was not his connection. He would go away for weeks at a time. Nobody knew where he went, etc. But if you read the way the Gedolim speak about him, my Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Yaakov, Rav Aaron, he was like their father in every single sense. And he behaved in very, very difficult to understand ways sometimes. Sometimes, no matter what you were doing wrong, he didn't say anything to you. And then maybe 20 years later, he would bring up, you know, 20 years ago, you didn't do a proper thing. Because he waited to the right time when the person was ready to absorb. And when he didn't give you mussar, you felt very bad because you felt he was ignoring you. Because forget, he gave mussar to the people he felt had the greatest yechailas for Bnei Aliyah. Sometimes he was tolerant and kind, and sometimes he was extremely stark. And even insulting, even being mavaza people publicly, if he had a cheshbon. So the cheshbonos were very, very mysterious. But all of the Talmidim say that he was the kayach that was mashpia on them tremendously. Many Talmidim lived in his house for prolonged periods of time. The Alter son became Rosh Yeshiva of Mir. Reb Lezer Yehuda Finkel was the Alter of Slobodka's son. And just to give you an example, the story goes that Reb Lezer Yehuda came from Mir to visit his father, and the Alter was talking to Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was a bucher at the time, and the Rebbetzin said, "Your son is here. Why don't you stop and say hello?" So the Alter said, "I'm talking to one son. Why do I stop for the other son?" He says, "My Talmidim are my sons too." He says, "There is no chilek." So the Alter of Slobodka was the kayach of Slobodka, even though he was not the Rosh Hashanah, he was not the Mashgiach. He did give shmuzin every week, twice a week, and they tended to be an hour and a half long. So it was a fairly long Musar Shmuz. One time they say he was speaking Friday night, and the Rebbetzin stuck her head in the door and says, "The boys have to eat." So it says he stopped in the middle of a sentence. He says he was not going to keep them any longer. He just stopped in the middle. He was mafsik and the like. Now, the third... Let's see what time it is. Is it finished?
12 after.
Okay, well, we'll stop here. But next week we'll be mamshik with the Alter of Slobodka, and then I'm going to mention the Sheet of Navardik, and then some of the other Talmidim.